Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, the podcast.
You know, the NBA celebrated its first half in Atlanta yesterday. Quote, unquote, first half All-Star game is done. Most teams looking ahead to the second half. Two games Wednesday, 11 on Thursday, which includes the Brooklyn Nets.
That's why we play that song, What's Next, by Drake. You see the setup right there, Zubin? You see how we transitioned that?
Well done.
Yeah.
They got played.
All right, Alan.
They got the Celtics coming up. I think I hit a button I shouldn't have hit.
Yeah,
sorry,
I was like,
about
why
that.
Why am I echoing?
Little echo there. They got the Celtics on Thursday, and they'll be the new look Brooklyn Nets because, Jay, they have added Blake Griffin, the six-time All-Star. Obviously, this is everywhere you look on the Nets, it's superstar after superstar after superstar after superstar. So what does this move do getting them closer to trying to win that elusive first NBA championship?
First off, let's address one thing. It was horrible for the league and horrible for Blake Griffin that we were tracking the amount of time that one of the most athletic players the league has ever seen did not have a damn dunk. Did not have a dunk. If that goes to show you anything, Key, he was checked out while he was in Detroit. Checked out for a longer period of time. But what a new environment does for players is sometimes it awakens them, especially when they have a chance to win a title. Something that Blake Griffin, he only really had when he was with the Clippers, to be frank with you. Those teams with CP3 and DeAndre Jordan, they always fell short, okay? You add his play with this team, it's over. The game is over. Now, you can say, well, they have defensive issues. Okay, they have Nick Claxton, they have DeAndre Jordan. Now, both serviceable bigs that can protect the middle, if they have to go big. But now, when you play with Blake Griffin in the lineup, a guy that shoots a good rate from the three-point line and has a good mid-range game, you involve him in pick and pops, his game will become unlocked when you put him with Kyrie Irving, James Harden, and Kevin Durant, all who thrive in pick and roll scenarios. So now, if I'm James Harden, if I'm at the top of the key, Blake Griffin's coming up for a screen from me, how do you guard it? Do you switch it? That's a mismatch for James Harden. If you switch, now I have a big on me. If Blake pops, if you want to double team me because I'm coming off, great, knock down the three. If I come off the corner and Kyrie's in the corner, boom, kick the Kyrie for a corner. If I want to skip the ball to KD, who's then isolated because now you have to help on all these other perimeter players and we're keeping the lane open, you tell me how you guard that. And if you want to go big, if the Lakers do want to go big when they get there, okay, you want to play Marcus Gasol and you want to play Anthony Davis, that probably gives you an advantage from a size perspective. But now I'm going to move KD to the five. Guard us small. How do you guard that? How do you guard it? You have to outscore. You have to outscore the Brooklyn Nets. So here's my thing. I think this was one of the missing pieces. And this added a piece. The Brooklyn Nets are by far the favorite to win it.
Damn.
It's so true.
It just is. Man. And I want to, if Blake Griffin doesn't go to the Nets, Key, I've said this before, Lakers still the favorite. I still would have picked the Lakers to win over KD, James, and Kyrie.
Yeah,
I would
have. They got stronger just now. I mean, it's a little bit of a head scratcher. Like Jay Will was saying, when you're in certain places and you feel a certain way, you go and you get re-energized going to Brooklyn with what they're doing and the coaches and the players that they surround you, which you just feel better. Like, you know that you can't do what you did in Detroit. You got to take that game and get to a certain level because they're at a certain level.
Let me ask you this, Jay. Take me inside here. So the next game that Blake Griffin plays, presumably Thursday against the Celtics, whatever the case may be, it'll be the first game in his regular season career he has not started. Just take me inside the mindset there. He's played like 642 games, and I think he started every single one of them. He's not starting on this team, right?
Why wouldn't he?
Well, yeah.
I'm like, what? Unless you just think because he hasn't – unless they just have – they want to kind of slowly move him into the role. Is that what you mean?
Yes, to a degree, but you don't think it's out of the question that the Nets just go with their five?
I mean, they can go with their five. Blake Griffin's going to be a starter.
Yeah, they're not doing that, yeah.
Okay.
Blake Griffin's going to be a starter. He'll become like the queen piece to a degree on a chessboard, right? And now you have multiple queens, obviously, but just he will be involved in so much action. And here, the more he's a screener, is the more you're going to see him popping out and knocking down wide open jump shots because of the amount of attention that Kyrie, James Harden, or Kevin Durant are going to warrant. Like, he will be a great utility piece for them down the stretch.
Yeah, no, he's a starter. They didn't bring him in there to come off the bench and be sixth man of the year. I mean, that's not He may not start his first game out, but he certainly is going to be a starter before the end of the year.
By how many games in? Just a week in? What does he need to reacclimate to a team that has so many guys that need touches?
Yeah, but everybody tries to use that argument. Like, yeah, everybody needs touches, but the ball's in James Harden's hands. He runs the PG, right? So, look, man, I played with some bad teams before in my life, okay? You know what happens when you play with a bad team? I've told you guys a story about what used to happen to me on the Bulls.
Oh,
in
the shot
right?
clock.
About the shot clock, right? Where somebody has the ball, and all of a sudden, you know, 3 seconds left on the shot clock, they can't get a shot up. Keyshawn, here! And you, Keyshawn, catches the ball. You're like, damn, what do? I got to get it up. Next thing you know, you start looking at box scores. You're like, what, 50% of the shots I'm taking are 2 seconds left in the shot clock? What is going on? Right? Like, that exists on bad teams. When you go to a good team and you got one of your star players who's a willing passer and people willing to share the rock, it feels like an all-star game to a degree. And it's a lot easier to buy into when the ultimate goal is to win a championship than saying, man, I'm in Detroit.
Yeah, this.
Let's be real. I'm in Detroit.
Yeah.
Jay Rose is my guy. We talk about all – he's in Detroit.
Way different than Brooklyn.
Way different. Leave it as that.
And this is not the Brooklyn Nets of Paul Pierce and KG and them. This is a different – you know what I'm saying? Like, these are younger, kind of like – they got a lot of pop in them still. So, it's going to be fun to watch. I hate to see it, but it's going to be fun to watch. And I'm not worried about the Lakers. Once we get AD back, we straight. Bring them on.
I mean, that's the question. When does Anthony Davis come back? And look – Rich Paul and that organization have a big time decision to make, because Kendrick Perkins has said it. I've heard Rich Paul say it too, that when that injury happened to Kevin Durant, Rich Paul was like, look, man, if that ever happened to LeBron, he's not coming back. He's not coming back. So those words, fast forward years later, if AD doesn't feel okay, do you sacrifice long term for short term gratification to win a chip? Especially at LeBron being 36, I don't know. But I'm going to be attached to that TV screen watching every single action.
Yeah,
of that.
Now,
I'll tell you that.
You don't put AD out there unless he's ready. Because AD has to essentially be the heir apparent A1 to LeBron James whenever that time comes. You sign AD for the long haul, not for the short term.
But, Key, here's what happens with the Lakers. And I love Marc Gasol. I think he's an ambassador of the game. But he's going to start getting exploded defensively. Because what I saw right before the All-Star break, exactly, he moves. Like, y'all can see it. Key was it's like a robot on the court. My man's just like, That's what we used to do when we used to play against the Lakers, man. I'm like, all right, Tyson, Shaq's guarding you. Come here, Tyson. Come set this screen every time. Because Shaq was going to play below the free throw line. That was a wide open jumper for me. And those are the kind of liabilities that
you
have.
Did you hit him?
Yeah.
I'm just asking.
We only played him twice. I mean, I didn't know if you hit, obviously.
I didn't know if you hit the J or boom and came out.
Shaq over there looking at me with his mouth all open because we just kept running up and down the court. Right, but that's what happens with Marc Gasol when he's on the court. Liability defensively.
We'll see what happens. Just a game to circle. Yeah, Lakers Nets April 10th could be a possible.
And then Shaq
NBA
knocked me
finals.
On my back, and I stopped talking trash to him.
Preview: Keyshawn, J. Will Zubin, presented by Progressive Insurance. All of our guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. So we're asking a question this morning, and this coming off our NBA conversation, this could actually be a really good question because a lot of people are asking about whether the league should make some modifications here or there. Every sport, no matter how popular, can always do things better. And today's question is based upon something the Ravens put forth in the NFL last week, which is a new concept for overtime. It's a little bit complicated, and it's certainly not something that probably will pass, but teams have certainly tried it over the years. So they want to see overtime be a little different. They don't want the coin toss to determine a little bit too much. So they have put their proposal to the table. We'll see what happens. So it got us thinking, if you don't like the NFL's overtime, it's gone down from 15 minutes to 10. The NBA's overtime at 5 minutes. Hockey's overtime going 3-on-3, but having a different rule in the postseason. And obviously, you need a winner. Golf majors, you can play 18 holes if you're tied at the U.S. Open on a Monday. And in other sports, it's not 18 holes. Tennis, fifth sets, boxing, whatever you want. Anything that needs to be changed in its overtime in its last stanza or last period. So, what sport is it? And how would you fix it? Let's get right to the calls based on the Ravens. Corey is in Charlotte. You're on ESPN Radio. Corey, what sport needs a fix and how would you fix it in OT?
First of all, thank you for having me, fellas. Good morning. I would say the NFL overtime rule, First, I would get them to adopt the college rule of starting at the 25. And after a TD, you must go for a two-point conversion or kick a 55-yard for 3 points. So, like, no, like, easy stuff. Like, you just got to try to go for it, you know, just go for it from there. And after the third OT, just to get a little more spice in it, if both teams are tied, then do a one-on-one, like a Starkest-style shootout. Like, get your team's best receiver or tight end versus their team's best DB and corner and go from there.
That'd be interesting, Key. You'd probably be up for something like that. It's crazy. It's
too complicated, man. Just put the ball on the 20-yard line. Do like college. Each team get a possession, see who scores, and let's call it a day.
One other thing to the Ravens proposal that hasn't been talked about a lot, because everybody's talking about the spot and choose and all this, offense, defense, and then they discuss the sky judge. There's another scenario that they're thinking where you play the entire overtime period, mm-hmm. right? Now, this is obviously, this is getting, again, to your point, getting a little complicated, but they've thrown this one out. Just tell me what you think about this. It's not getting a lot of traction just because everything else is the headlines. You play the whole overtime period, and then, under these rules, and then you play another, listen to this, this is the Ravens, 7.5 minutes. I don't know why 7.5. I have no idea. You play another 7.5 minutes.
On top of the overtime.
Correct.
Okay.
And no matter what happens, whoever leads at that point, overtime plus 7.5, whoever is winning wins the game. So you could score multiple times, like all that sort of stuff.
That's too much for me.
That's basically much. Asking for a fifth quarter.
Almost like a half a quarter. And then when you hit the end of that half quarter, whatever the score is, whoever's winning wins the game.
No.
I agree with you. I'm just saying that's another.
No, I'm just like, no. That's garbage.
You said it, though, Zubin, like you were excited about it, like there was a chance.
You're really selling it to me, well, and I'm not buying it.
We both know there's no rule changes coming. It just, it takes, the NFL can't
just
agree
that,
on
man,
75%
the NFL,
of anything,
they should just
man.
Look at the college joint in give them a couple possessions and go from there, because it's a lot of teams that cannot score from the 20, and it's a lot of teams that will stop teams from scoring from the
20. How hard is it for NFL owners to agree on 75% of owners to agree on anything?
It's very hard.
Anything.
Yeah, it's very hard. I don't think that they've ever gotten 100% on anything.
The Raiders would always abstain.
It was always the Raiders or somebody, right?
We're
it's
just
always
abstaining.
Somebody.
Just,
always be angry about
always
it.
Always something. Not enough money or something.
I do wish, Zubin, the NBA went to your two-minute rule for overtime. And I also wish that they would be allowed certain, like FIBA, if the ball is on the rim, you can knock it off. Like, there's no goaltending. I mean, unless you can't put your hand through the rim. But the ball's, like, rolling around the rim. You know, on FIBA, you can knock the ball off. I would love to see the league do something like that.
One of the reasons I went to the two-minute NBA is obviously, I mean, if you were watching yesterday, and I know this is not the NBA, but this is indicative of sometimes of what happens in the NBA. Yesterday, Iowa and Wisconsin played a huge college basketball game. And the last minute took 20 minutes.
Exactly.
20 minutes to play 1 minute. And a lot of people have complained at the end of NBA games it happens. The other
Iowa,
thing,
Wisconsin, you really got to be a basketball fan in college to watch that.
It was a big game
big
in
game.
The Big Ten.
I mean,
big
I
game.
Get it, but
Big Ten's going to get like 9-10 teams in. Yeah.
But think about this, Key. The other reason I would say go for the 2 minutes.
Head fake, pass, reverse pivot, back door. Yeah, I mean, like, good pass.
You know, not taking into account offensive rebounds, both teams would get, you know, two possessions if it's a 24-second, 48 for each on a two-minute. The other thing I would say is it actually puts more strategy into the game than you think. So, for example, if you go into the overtime period and you're down and you need to preserve possessions and stop the clock, you can always do a hack-a-Shaq, hack-a-Howard. This year it would be like hack-a-Giannis, a tremendous player who's not a good free-throw shooter. But in a two-minute overtime, you can hack-a-Giannis. He makes one free throw. That could be the only scoring in the overtime. So you would be against doing things like that. Think about it. You know, it could possibly be the case. I think you get good fluid basketball for two solid minutes.
Nah, I don't like his.
Yeah, that's just I like it for
I don't
a degree.
Like 2 minutes, man.
But it also could be 2 minutes that turns into 25 minutes.
That's true.
So you got to be ready for both there.
Jeff in Fort Myers, Florida. You're on ESPN Radio. What sport needs to fix its overtime or, shall we say, innings issue, and how would you fix it?
Hey, man, thanks for having me on, guys. Baseball games are long and boring enough, not to mention when they go into extra innings. So what if we did a fun, and I know traditionalists are going to crap on this, but what if we did a home run derby at the end of maybe call it 10 or 11 innings?
No. No. Just I would say you go to 12 innings. and that's it, and cut it off. Figure it out from there. I don't want to be going into 16 innings and all that craziness. 12 innings, and that's the cutoff, and then figure it out from there.
What's figure it out, though?
I know, but let's start. Let's max it at 12, and then let's figure out maybe we put guys on second base. Maybe we do what they did during the pandemic. Right. Maybe that's the way to go, but they certainly need to shorten it. There's
they
no
could do
question
that in the 10th, right? They could do it in the 10th and make it easier.
Agreed.
I would maybe 11 to 12. 10 is just, that's a little too short.
Okay, so from swapping in rules and swapping out rules, Eddie in New York, you're on ESPN Radio. You want to swap in, swap out NFL quarterbacks. Hit us up on this.
Hey, what's going on? Key, big fan, man. I never talked to you before.
What's up, Eddie?
What I got for the Jets. All right, just for the Jets on Darnold. You know, I think Darnold's just as good as any quarterback in the draft besides Trevor Lawrence. They're about equal. But the problem is the money. What I would do is trade down the next 2 years, build the offensive line, defensive line, and I would get Tyrod Taylor for 2 to 3 years and don't even dress the quarterback till the beginning of the third year, the beginning of the draft, or free agency because there's going to be so many quarterbacks. Okay, Tyrod Taylor can get it done for you, keep you about 500, build a team. He's a leader. He's got the skills. And I would like to keep Sam, but the money is going to be a problem eventually. So that's the only problem. And plus, you really don't know how great Sam's going to be. That's the other thing. He's above average, but how much above average?
Gotcha. Love the call, but I got to say, in one breath, he said Sam is as good as Trevor Lawrence, and then he just said, I'm not sure how good Sam is.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's all over the board, obviously, clearly, but look, man, the Sam Darnold thing is interesting because, you know, you miss on guys with this high praise all the time. But how can you evaluate a player at that position when his head coach is awful and he has no supporting cast? How can you possibly evaluate a quarterback? Evaluating Carson Wentz or evaluating Jared Goff is different because they had players around them.
Had the pieces.
And they had coaches and had the pieces. How in the hell can you possibly evaluate Sam and come to a conclusion that he's not good for you? How can you do that? And then you factor in the money. The money becomes fully guaranteed on the fifth-year option. Okay, I get it. That's what quarterbacks make. The lower-level quarterbacks of the starters in the league are $20 million guys. That's what it costs you.
If he stays with the Jets, is there any quarterback that needs a bigger year than him?
There's a ton of them out there that need big years. Drew Locke needs a big year in Denver.
But are people talking about Locke the way they're talking about Darnold? You're telling me this guy's the second coming if he just gets the right pieces.
Well, I think you...
Not a lot of
people
are saying
that. I don't know if he's the second coming.
The way that you're talking, Key?
I think he could be really good, man. He doesn't have anything, Jay.
No, I understand.
They gave his best receiver...
Second coming, though, I think Joe Namath, right? I think, like, next level. Like, is that what you're saying?
I wasn't born to see Joe play.
Okay,
so.
I'm thinking New York. I mean, you're in New York, right? You say second coming. I think it's
When I say he will be the best quarterback that the Jets have had in a really, really long time. Let's
if
put
that's
it that
name
way.
It, that's 50 years. I would say that's pretty good.
Well, Chad Pennington was good. Mark did okay for a couple years. I mean, you know, Vinny was there for a short stint. I'm just talking about a guy that they drafted. That he would be probably the second best of all of them, if my memory serves me correct. You know, there was Richard Todd's in there along the way, and Boomer Esiason or whatever the case is, one of Evan's favorite. I mean, so when you start to think about it, though, Sam is you put some pieces around him. They let Robbie Anderson get away. You gotta understand what he is before you let him go. You just do. Take that pick at number 2, move it down, get some picks, grab some players. That's what the coaches are here for, is to coach them up, not to run from them. That's what bad coaches do, is they run. I don't know any good coaches that – good coaches stick through the players and try and get something out of them. Bad coaches run from them.
Namath, Todd McElroy. The Jets do love those Alabama quarterbacks, that's for sure. On the way, one NFL team is looking to make major changes on and off the field this particular season, and the one move they made on the field could start a trend in the NFL. We'll get into that. And the person herself, after Jay, has this from Cintas.
Today, people expect a new level of clean. That's right. Cintas provides a wide range of essential products and services that help businesses keep their facilities and employees clean and safe. Cintas will keep you well-stocked with essential supplies like face masks, hand sanitizers, gloves, and thermometers. Cintas will hygienically clean and deliver your uniforms. That's nice. Cintas also helps you protect employees and customers with first aid and safety supplies and fire protection services. Cintas helps you open your doors with confidence every day. Learn how Cintas can help keep your business clean and safe at Cintas.com. Get Cintas and get ready for the workday.
The Nets continue making moves to their championship run, and now they're signing six-time All-Star Blake Griffin. Making Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to LinkedIn.com/sports.
More from Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin next.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/unsportsmanlike today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/unsportsmanlike.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus. Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.
Good morning, I'm Zubin Mehenti here with your SportsCenter update. SportsCenter presented by Progressive Insurance. You can save big when you bundle your auto, home, motorcycle, RV, or boat. Visit Progressive.com. NBA All-Star Weekend has come to an end. I know a lot of the All-Stars didn't want to be there, but we gave us some great entertainment and some great performance from Giannis. 35, he didn't miss a shot. He was 16 for 16, helping Team LeBron defeat Team Durant 170-150. That sounds like an all-star game score, doesn't it? Three-point contest was won in the clutch by Steph Curry. He commemorated the win to Klay Thompson, which was pretty cool. Anthony Simons won the slam dunk contest, and Domantas Sabonis won the skills challenge. Speaking of NBA all-stars, the six-time all-star Blake Griffin has agreed to a deal with the Brooklyn Nets, already fortifying an incredibly strong roster. The Nets will open the second half of the season along with 21 other teams on Thursday. They'll take on the Boston Celtics. We have two games on the docket on Wednesday, so a couple days and the NBA will be back. And back to this great story, Black History Always. Today is International Women's Day, March is Women's History Month. We honor Jennifer King, the NFL's first full-time black female assistant coach. Back in January, the Washington football team promoted King to assistant running backs coach. She previously had served as a full-year coaching intern with the Washington football team. That's your SportsCenter update. And on that note, it's great to have Jennifer King join us this morning on the Goodyear hotline. So whenever something like this happens, Jennifer or anybody, the first thing I always wonder is, like, How did you find out, right? I mean, a lot of times if it's a big promotion like this, they bring in, they think maybe you're just going to be told something ordinary, and then boom, they pop it on you. So how did you find out about this trailblazing promotion? Take us through that minute, if you could.
Yeah, it actually wasn't that exciting. You know, we were working, we were in a game week. I can't remember who we were preparing for, but Coach came by my office and let me know what was going to happen. And, you know, I thanked him. I was excited, but I kind of just went right back to work, and that was it.
Jennifer, what did it mean to you, though? Like, when you learned that you would be the first Black full-time female assistant coach in the National Football League?
It meant a lot. I don't think I realized the magnitude of it. You know, I was more excited about just the work that I had put in and all of the many years I've been working in football to achieve that accomplishment. The fact of being the first, and it never crossed my mind until obviously when it went public and things kind of went crazy. But that wasn't my first thought. My first thought was just it was a culmination of so much hard work that I put in.
You played football for 14 years. Mm-hmm. When did you longer than I played? When did you realize that you wanted to be a coach?
I was coaching basketball. You know, as soon as I graduated from college, I played a little ball in Australia and then started coaching college basketball. And, you know, I just love coaching, and I'd always loved football, but, you know, it wasn't really women getting opportunities in football. So I was coaching football at lower levels while coaching college basketball. But, you know, when I was able to combine, you know, football and coaching, you know, I jumped at the opportunity.
Jen, when do you think we will see the first woman head coach in the NFL?
I don't know. I mean, it could be a while. We're just kind of breaking in right now. So it's so important for the women in the league now to do such a good job and be a positive representation and show that, you know, we're, you know, more than capable of working in the league. So I'm not sure. That's a tough question. You know, I would love to see it one day, but I don't know when.
Yeah, it's crazy. That's naturally where my brain goes to, because I, you know, one day it would be so great for this not to be like really, really big news. You know what I mean? Just talking about how qualified and all the things you're going to bring to the table. But speaking of that, who were some of your mentors that have helped you get to this point?
Yeah, Scott Pioli was big for me. He's been in my corner, you know, since the beginning. When I first met Scott, he was assistant GM with the Falcons, but he's been great. The guys that I've worked for, Buddy Tevens, obviously Ron Rivera, Rick Neuheisel, have all been good to me. And then, you know, my mentors that I've had before this journey started, Jason Tuggle was big for me. He was my first boss when I was coaching college basketball. So he's always been there for me. I've known him for many years, and, you know, he's always there for great advice.
Jennifer, how, like, when you first started, and this has always been fascinating to me since, you know, I learned that you were, you know, basically assistant coach, whether you were interning or not, that's still an assistant coach to me. Because I played in the league, I played college football, right? And so I never had any instruction from anybody other than males. And so I've always been fascinated to see or hear how people or players have been receptive to a female coaching them in football. Because you got to remember, I played 20 years ago in the NFL. So it's kind of like, how would I have taken instruction? Even though you know what you're doing, I think it would have been fun. Too bad I missed that boat. How are the players receptive nowadays?
It's been fantastic. You know, everywhere I've been, the guys have been great. You know, at the end of the day, great athletes want to be better. And, you know, that's what I'm here to do, is help make them better. And we've been able to build, I think, great relationships, partly because I am a female. You know, I'm maybe a calming voice for them to be able to build those relationships. But I think, you know, coaching is teaching, and so many of us had, you know, women teachers growing up. So it's not a lot of a difference in coaching and teaching. So I think it's not as big a shock to them as some may feel, especially once we get to the nuts and bolts of it, and, you know, I'm able to help make them better.
Me and Jay was talking. Jay basically say, how would you have handled the situation? You know, because me, I was like fiery, like what I look at you as like my sister or my mom. You know what I'm saying? And you tell me to do something, and I'd be like, what you? Oh, okay, I understand, coach. I mean, it would be, you know, that's why it would be interesting to me. I wish I could have had that experience, though, for sure.
No, Keith, but it feels like, look, the job that they've done there, changing the culture, Jen, everything from Ron Rivera, from yourself, from everything that you guys had to handle coming into that organization, how challenging has that all been?
Yeah, I mean, I think coming in brand new and not being here before, you know, it's all about moving forward, you know, for me and a lot of us that have come now. And, you know, it's been really cool to be a part of this culture, and obviously winning the NFC East, you know, I think we're headed in the right direction. So it's been fantastic to be here. I'm super excited. It's fun to come to work every day.
Ooh, Jane got, she got her and Jason right. Y'all got the speaking points down now. I respect it. I love it. You ain't going to put me in the corner and ask me tough questions. I know the answer to say now.
No, she good. She can handle it.
Yeah, that's
been,
what I'm saying.
She's been shaped for this job for sure, 100%. The Bucks had two female assistant coaches on their staff and won the Super Bowl. How will that change in this league about the way people view their staffs when they go to build them?
I just think it's so important to, you know, to see that diversity can win and it does win. You know, there are so many teams in the playoffs this year with females on staff, and essentially, you know, the coaches just had the courage to open up their hiring pool to everybody. And, you know, it's a cool to have a diverse staff, whether it's male, female, black, white, you know, what other race you can think of, to bring different mindsets and different ideas and different backgrounds to really have one common goal, and that's win the Super Bowl. That's what they were able to do.
What other positions have you coached other than the running back spot that you're currently at now?
I've coached receivers and quarterbacks.
Okay. Did we give you a hard time? Did we get on your nerves? You know, receivers.
No, flamboyant wide receivers, though.
No, but you know how we are, Jim. We sometimes, our brains at receiver, we on a whole nother planet.
Yeah, I actually played some receiver too, so I get it, because I've probably been there a couple times, so it wasn't that bad.
Jen, let me ask you this. I obviously had a devastating injury in my life due to my accident. Another person I watched go through the same thing, not with obviously off the field, but on the field, is Alex Smith. How was it being around him, and what kind of things did he bring to the table this past year?
It was incredible to see his comeback journey. You know, he was a great leader for us, and I was just so happy to see him be able to get back on the field. You know, you never know what's going to happen. And not only did he get back on the field, but he balled out. So it was nice to see his journey. And he was just such a great presence.
You know, they often say the difference in the NFL between one team and another, winning and losing, the margins are razor, razor thin. So what is wrong with bringing a diverse opinion to the floor that nobody's thought about? Because maybe that's the one thing that hasn't been unturned that could make all the difference in the world. So I think that's another reason, not just the skin color, not just the positions, but it's the thought process that can be brought in that hasn't been seen in most organizations. And you're certainly on the leading edge of doing that. I'm glad we chased you down on International Women's Day as a part of Women's History Month in America. You're certainly amplifying that in the NFL for sure. Jennifer, thank you very much.
Congrats, Jennifer.
Go get it, Jen.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Here's the one thing I want to mention. Actually, two quick things
really
I want
cool.
to mention. Yeah, very good. Here's two things. She mentioned Pioli, and I want to bring this up. Pioli is actually, the five-time executive of the year. Pat's important guy. Works for CBS, but I heard him do an interview, and I heard him say this, and you would appreciate this, Jay, as a mogul in the investment world. I heard Warren Buffett say this. Both of them said,
he's put me in the same sentence as Warren Buffett.
You should mogul.
Take I'm gonna hire you for
you
all my companies, Zubin. I'm in.
What they've both said, and Pioli in sports, but Buffett is a bigger issue because you're talking about, right, world wealth. They both openly had said they had sisters, and when they grew up, Buffett, I believe, is 90, believe it or not. Buffett is 90 and still kicking it. He's still unbelievable.
I want him to kick it.
Well, yeah, me too.
Not the bucket, obviously.
No, not the bucket. No, I want him to keep working, keep driving around Omaha. No, but the thing is, both of them had said their sisters were smart as they were, mm-hmm. but just didn't have the chance.
Oh, yeah.
So Buffett basically said, my sister probably could have been wealthy, but I was a guy and I got chances. And Pioli said his sisters were as smart as him, but him being a guy gave him many more opportunities than his own siblings. And even they, those two titans of their own field, have realized that and been honest about it.
Yeah. You said it, though, Zubin. You said it's about the thought process that you come into it with. And I've heard a lot of executives talk about that. Do you come into the game with intent to hire people that look and are different than you, right? Like, that's intent. It takes that initial response initially right out of the gate.
And some people are afraid to do that, as we know.
Yeah, and obviously, unless you cross that first threshold, you never find out what the person's about. But if you don't give them that chance, anything they could do to help unlock your franchise, you'll never know about it. Keyshawn, J. Will Zubin, presented by Progressive Insurance. On the way.
I wonder how Key would have been, though. Key
got hot.
No, you'll always be respectful.
Major respect.
Okay, we'll talk about this later.
Oh, we got, we'll talk about it.
31 hours away, a little more than 31 hours away from franchise tag deadline day, 4 p.m. Eastern tomorrow. And the best insider in the NFL is here to tell us what to expect from Dak and the Cowboys between now and then after Key has this from CVS.
At CVS, we look for savings for you, from coupons and insurance coverage to lower cost options. Earn up to $50 in extra bucks each year just for filling prescriptions. Come in or call today for a free prescription saving review at CVS. That's healthier, made easier. Savings vary. Not all patients are eligible for savings. Ask pharmacists for details.
Hey, it's Greeny, and Monday we're looking back on the All-Star Game and all the festivities and ahead to the second half of the NBA season, plus NFL free agency around the corner. It's Greeny, starting 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and ESPN+. Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Adam Schefter, ESPN senior NFL insider and the host of the Adam Schefter podcast. When we talk about the women who have had the biggest impact on my life, the first half, absolutely my mother, Shirley Schefter, molded me, supported me, cheered me on to the heights that I've reached today, and I would be nowhere without my mother, Shirley Schefter. And in the second half of my life, my wife, Shari. I would not be at ESPN were it not for her pushing me to this spot today. So we thank Shirley Schefter. We thank Shari Mayo. We thank all the women out there. They help us be who we are today.
And on that note, Adam wrote a terrific book called The Man I Never Met, The Link Between the Man That I Never Met, Adam, and His Lovely Wife. It's an amazing book. It's an amazing story. And he's the NFL's best insider, and he joins us this morning here on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. He joins us on the Goodyear Hotline. Adam, here we go. 31 hours and change, but who's counting away from 4 p.m. Eastern tomorrow for tag deadline day? Let's hone in on the Cowboys and give us the intel you have as we head to tomorrow.
Well, Zubin, thanks for those kind words. And we're going to get a lot of deadlines between now and the coming days, because we got the deadline to the franchise tags, 4 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday. We had the start of the new league year, 4 p.m. Eastern a week from Wednesday. That's a bigger countdown to that deadline. And, of course, all the activity that's going to take place between now and then. Much of the focus, of course, will be on Dak Prescott and whether the Cowboys can figure out a way to get him signed to a long-term deal. Keep in mind that once they use the franchise tag on him, which you figure they're going to be doing by the 4 p.m. Eastern deadline tomorrow, that's a $37.7 million cap hit. That is the largest cap hit for any franchise player in NFL history. And the Dallas Cowboys would prefer not to have that on their books, which means they would want to work out a long-term deal. Dak would like to work out a long-term deal, but stop us when you've heard this one before. These two sides have talked about this for over 2 years and have been unable to produce a long-term deal in the past. Now, there is a difference this year. I think that you have Dak coming off the injury that he did last year, which you would have to think would influence his perspective and thought process a little bit. And you have Dak at the inflated number and an even greater urgency to get that deal done, because if they don't get that deal done this offseason, he's going to walk after next season and leave Dallas altogether. So you'd have to figure that affects Dallas's perspective. Between the two sides having certain influences on them, you'd like to think that they'd find a way to be able to work out a deal.
Adam, I know you've been following this story for the past 2 years, as you mentioned, right? Right along with most of everybody else. But you have such great insight on these things. Let me ask you this. How come they haven't been able to get a deal done? Is it because it's the average? Is it the real cash value in the deal? Or is it the length of the deal or a combination?
Well, I don't think the money was an issue, Key. I think last year, I think the real issue was the length of the deal. Dak wanted a 4-year deal and was insistent
upon getting a 4-year deal. Dallas wanted a 5-year deal. And so now, a year later, fast forwarded ahead, does Dak say, okay, well, I want a 3-year deal. I want a 4-year. I'm good on a 4-year deal now. Does Dallas give up that 4-year deal knowing that if it had him last year, if you count that, and 4 this year, that would be 5? Is that okay with Dak? I think the length has been the bigger hang-up. Look, the numbers, if they can get this figured out, are not going to be the holdup. The numbers are going to be enormous. They're going to be gargantuan. They're going to be whatever really Dak wants them to be, because we've seen the top prices paid to quarterbacks like Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. And guess what? Dak Prescott may not be quite as good as Patrick Mahomes, but he's got more leverage than any of them, and he's got as much leverage as any player in the NFL has had in recent years.
Shefty, if he gets tagged again, which it looks like he's going to be, what does that mean for the relationship between Dak and the organization?
No bearing on the relationship, Jay. The question is whether they can get the long-term deal done. But again, to go back to that tag again, well, if they were to tag him next year again, that tag would be somewhere in the neighborhood of about $54 million. That's why that tag this year is probably the last time that Dak Prescott ever gets tagged. And that's why if they don't get a deal done, he becomes an unrestricted free agent at this time next year. And who wouldn't want a quarterback in his late 20s when he's truly free and one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the league? So, again, Dallas is fighting to keep its quarterback. It's fighting to preserve its cap. It's fighting to be able to keep some other players, to keep that cap number down, because this is a year where the salary cap is going to go down. So if you don't get that long-term deal done with Dak and you have to keep his number on the books at $37.7 million, that's going to cripple you, and it's going to limit the type of roster you can build.
Take me to the other team in Texas, the Houston Texans. Why do we keep hearing reports, Shefty, that they're digging their heels in, that they're not going to come to an agreement potentially with Deshaun Watson as a trade, to work a trade out in some form?
Because it's March 8th, Jay. If we're still hearing the same thing on April 28th or right before the draft, then it's a different deal. There's no urgency and there's no pressure on the Texans to move now. And by the way, they may hold to the same exact stance right before the draft, but their deadline is not this week. Their deadline is not the start of the new league year. They can just sit there and let the market continue to build and let teams get more and more anxious. And yes, some teams will sign quarterbacks and trade for quarterbacks and make moves for quarterbacks that will limit the market. But you know what? The Texans aren't looking to get rid of Deshaun Watson. And if the market dries up on Deshaun Watson, that's the way it goes. They're not looking to move him anyway. And if something materializes, we don't know that the Texans are going to come off their stance. We feel reasonably confident that Deshaun Watson is equally dug in and not going to report and vows not to play for that team again. So who wins that battle in that game of chicken? We'll see. But on March 8th, the answer is going to be a lot different, perhaps, than it might be on April 27th, the week of the draft. There's no urgency to do anything right now. I don't see the situation changing anytime soon, but I think the next real pressure point becomes the week of the NFL draft.
Boy, these quarterbacks, Adam, is something else. There's a hot quarterback out of Seattle that everybody is eyeing. Are the Chicago Bears really making a strong push to try and pry Russell Wilson away from the Seahawks?
Well, just think about it this way, Key. Who's playing quarterback for the Bears right now? We don't know. Are Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace fighting for their jobs? They are. So why would they not do everything within their power to see if there's a way to pry loose Russell? Of course they're going to do that. Now, the question is Seattle going to actually trade Russell Wilson? And unlike the Texans, I don't think so far we've heard Seattle come out and say, we are not trading our quarterback. Have you heard that from anybody there yet? I have
not.
Okay. Now, they may come out and say that today. They're more than welcome to. I've not heard that just yet. And I'm not telling you they will trade him. It's going to be hard to trade him because, number one, you got to get equal value. You got to fill the quarterback position. And this is the most important factor of all, it's a $39 million dead cap hit for Seattle if it trades Russell Wilson. In a year where the cap is down, and again, we're going to keep referring to that, how do you take on a $39 million dead cap hit for a guy who's one of the best players in the league? Like, you want to do that? No. But again, until the Seahawks say, we are not trading Russell Wilson, we will continue talking about the idea that they could trade Russell Wilson.
It's an incredible story to follow. Adam just talked to J.J. Watt in his most recent podcast, but I would recommend the one before that because very, very compelling interview. Adam talks to Tim Tebow on how Tim thinks Urban Meyer is going to work in Jacksonville. Everybody's weighed in on it, but maybe the player that encapsulates Meyer the most weighs in on Adam's podcast. You can get it anywhere you get podcasts.
You didn't ask him about Key not having Tim Tebow in his top five?
That's a whole other argument okay. for a whole right, other sorry. Day. Yeah, Adam, yeah. thank you very much. Appreciate you joining us this morning.
All right, Shefty.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
You got it. That's Adam Schefter.
I don't have you on the top five year. Either.
That's hey, I don't look at your basketball list. I look at your football list.
That was the topic
Bobby Hurley,
last week.
Stop. Johnny Dawkins. Stop. Kyrie.
Marty Clark. Come on, won't you? On the way, Mahomes money for Dak? He says maybe.